The lightly armed taxi service now. Nakari winced.
Can we call it a heavily armed taxi service? I like the sound of that better.
I shrugged. Sure.
No argument, huh? That's nice.
She turned the intercom back on. R2, can we jump? I asked. Let's go if you're ready.
Jumping,
came the reply. And once we were safely in hyperspace, Nakari unbuckled and rose from her seat, imitating her father as she headed aft.
Pilot, refreshment is in order. Fly responsibly in my absence.
She trailed a finger along my shoulder as she passed by, and I couldn't suppress the grin her touch inspired. I liked her, and was starting to think maybe she liked me back. Nothing I could do about it now, however. Flirting on a mission is one of the best ways to ensure mission failure, and most likely romantic failure. I'd seen Han Solo get in trouble too many times while he was trying to charm Leia to doubt it, and he hadn't exactly won her good graces yet. We had 5 planets to skip over before we got to Nanthri, and decided which way to go from there. We could swing to the Galactic North, which had the benefit of being a shorter transit route to Omarith, but the drawback of more Imperial worlds. Or dart south for a short distance and then east again, traversing Hutt space and avoiding the Empire, while risking who knew what in the seedy side of the galaxy. One thing was more likely near Hutt space. Bounty hunters. If the Empire had rebroadcast that message about a bounty on our heads on unencrypted channels, we'd have all sorts of beings on the lookout for us who didn't need to abide by Imperial protocols and procedures. They also didn't need to do all the other things Empire forces needed to do. Patrol vast areas of space and guard against the Alliance, police smugglers, and so on. Bounty hunters could devote 100% of their attention to finding us. Thinking about that made me nervous. But I'd rather face a single bounty hunter's ship than the heavy firepower the Imperial fleet could bring to bear. Turning south was probably a better decision. R2, when we get to Nanthri, begin calculating a jump that will take us through Hutt space. If you can do a jump all the way across it without stopping, that would probably be best. The droid's agreement showed up on my holoscreen as Drusel's voice came through the intercom.
Would you like my assistance in calculating these jumps? It should not be terribly taxing. Indeed, I would find it refreshing.
I searched for a diplomatic way to say no. If by some awful chance Drusel was in truth an Imperial spy, and this was all an elaborate sting, then the coordinates she fed us might lead directly to an Imperial fleet position. And I wasn't sure I wanted to trust the ship's navigation to calculations done in someone's head anyway. What if she forgot to carry the one or something like that? Thanks, Drusel, but R2's already wired in and familiar with the ship's specs, so I'd like to have him take lead. Perhaps you could check his work, though? I winced, hoping she would not take my reply as a slight on her abilities.
That would be fine,
she said, and then a silence settled over the cockpit. Presumably both R2 and Drusel were lost in pure math and had nothing more to say. With Nakari gone for a while, I had nothing to do except remain in the pilot's seat in case something went wrong. It was an ideal opportunity to meditate and see if I could strengthen my bond with the Force. When I'd first felt the Force on the Millennium Falcon, it had been the barest tickle of a presence in my consciousness and in the air around me that wasn't attributable to my 5 senses. Since then, I had reached out to the Force on numerous occasions, and each time it grew marginally easier to make that contact and feel the Force swirl and coalesce around me. A not quite tangible, but very real sensation. Sort of like exercising and discovering over time that the same routine requires less effort because your strength and endurance have increased. I didn't have any goal in mind other than increasing my awareness of the Force. There were no vegetables or other objects to nudge around in the cockpit anyway, and I figured a greater grasp of the Force would help me perform such tasks more quickly later on, and perhaps allow me to move larger objects, or accomplish any number of other Jedi exercises. The streaming star lines of hyperspace were excellent for clearing my mind. No distractions, just visual white noise. I remembered training with the remote, wearing a helmet with the blast shield down, and feeling the Force as a power within and without that worked with me and yet was not me. That had been a twinge, a tiny awakening of a new part of my mind, like a half-glimpsed dawn through sleep-encrusted eyes. I knew I wasn't fully awake yet. I think part of me wanted to go back to sleep. But the dawn comes, whether you sleep through it or not. And I think the Force might be like that. Always there, but unseen until you make the effort. My breathing slowed and deepened, and soon I became aware that there were others breathing on the ship. Drusel was nearest, sitting in an attitude of prayer, or perhaps meditation, like myself, attempting to soothe away her worries. Perhaps the activity of her mind was pure math. Farther back and to the left, Nakari felt happy, though I didn't know about what. Her breath was uneven and sort of purred. Was she humming to herself? I couldn't hear to confirm it, of course, but I felt through the Force that it must be true.